Well, seeing a guide dog lead its owner down a busy street is a relatively familiar occurrence. Now, a new category of support animals has entered into the public sphere, and this is the emotional support animal. This new service animal phenomenon actually raises some questions around the rules and practices surrounding these animals' roles. To discuss these questions, I'm joined by Dr. Rachel Hogg, lecturer at the Charles Sturt University School of Psychology. Good afternoon, Rachel.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining me. Just to kind of set a context here, what is an emotional support animal?
So emotional support animals usually start their lives as a garden variety pet and transition into this role over time, which is quite different to service animals who are traditionally trained and have quite a long period of sensitising or habituating training designed to allow them to handle the different kind of tasks that they might need to complete and be able to function okay in the environments that they might find themselves in, such as airports and shopping centres and really wherever someone needs to go. In contrast to that, an emotional support animal is usually an animal that the person already has and they seek out registration for that to be a licensed emotional support animal.
So if I get this right, the difference is that one is actually trained to be fit for purpose, yet the other has to kind of adapt into being that emotional support.
Yes, correct. And in the case of service animals, their training is usually quite specific. It's usually not done by the person who is handling the animal, although they may participate in some respects in that training, whereas emotional support animals are in some cases provided with sort of training, but in a very ad hoc kind of manner. So we're seeing an industry that is increasingly popular, but currently isn't particularly well regulated. And part of the reason for that is that it's actually quite difficult to find a licensed mental health professional who is in a position or is willing to properly register an emotional support animal. So we do see lots of fake registrations and fraudulent activities taking place. But in some cases, it's probably fair to argue that that's occurring because the person feels that's their only option rather than necessarily having sort of, negative motivations or trying to deliberately circumnavigate the system.
Yeah, look, as you're suggesting, there is legitimacy now around the roles of these support animals. What are the key complications around this tag, if you will, that they now have?
There's two parts to this question. There's complications for the animals, and then there are the complications for the people interacting with them. From the animal point of view, one of the key concerns is that the point of having an emotional support animal, unlike a pet, is that you take that animal pretty much everywhere you go. Now, lots of us like to take our pets with us, but many of us would not try to put our pets on a plane unless we were moving countries with them. And therefore, we're seeing emotional support animals who are being placed in highly stimulating environments that can be quite unpredictable and quite stressful for those animals. So that's one factor to consider. And then in terms of the sort of broader societal effects, look, there are potentially disruptions. There can be situations where perhaps one man's greatest friend is another person's greatest fear. There are plenty of people who have phobias of dogs and other animals. So there can be confrontational social situations where an emotional support animal causes disruptions for other individuals. But it is important to note, particularly given the mental health crisis that we're seeing in Australia at the moment and the paucity of services that are available, this is a good option for a lot of people. And there are two things that emotional support animals can do that therapists can't do. One of those is that an emotional support animal can provide physical contact and touch for a person. And that can be a really, really useful grounding kind of thing, particularly for people with trauma histories. And the other thing is that animals are with us all the time. If you have a weekly appointment with your psychologist, it may or may not occur that your distress levels are quite high around the time of that appointment. Whereas if an animal is with you on a consistent day-to-day basis, they can be there at those points where the stress peaks. So we certainly, I think, need to take this seriously as a part of mental health care in Australia. And right now I'm not sure if that's really the case, but it's certainly a direction that I think we will be going in years to come.
Yeah, you're seeing a growth in these support animals for mental health care?
Yes, and the visibility is increasing as well, and I think public understanding is increasing. What can be a little bit confrontational or perhaps challenging for the public is where you see a service animal, often the person that they're supporting may have a visually apparent disability, so they may have a cane, they may be in a wheelchair, they might have a visual deficit or hearing deficit, and that is quite obvious, where in the case of an emotional support animal, the person with that animal may appear just like anybody else, and therefore they're much more likely to face questions about the legitimacy of having that support animal. So I think some of the attitudes or some of the hesitancy around community support for emotional support animals does come from the invisibility of mental health concerns and also the stigma that is often associated with mental health.
You're suggesting here the invisibility of the role of this service animal. You've already suggested that it's quite clear if you see a seeing eye dog. It's a familiar sight, but somebody who's there to support somebody at an emotional level, not so visible. How do we get around this, and how do we start to grow acceptance of this animal as a legitimate service animal?
Well, look, in most cases, emotional support animals and service animals are usually wearing a vest or some kind of physical marker that suggests that they're not just an everyday pet. So if we're seeing people who are engaging appropriately with those kinds of things, then I think really what we need to do is actually not ask questions, because in much the same way that in a medical context, you know, physical conditions such as, you know, extreme pain are not always visible, people can experience things physically and psychologically that are not always obvious. And I think we should be questioning whether we actually need evidence. Do we need people to justify why they have these animals? And I think the answer to that is, generally speaking, no. It can be quite an intrusive conversation to have with somebody. But on the flip side, there is also, I guess, a continuum here, because we're talking about these categories of animals as though they're very separate. In reality, I think most people who have a service dog for physical reasons receive mental and emotional support from that animal, and those of us who have pets also generally receive physical and emotional support, particularly emotional support from those animals. So rather than thinking about these, they are separate categories, and there are things that we need to think about specific to those categories, but there's also a continuum here, and I think that's important to acknowledge as well.
Absolutely right. Look, Rachel, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention and talking to us about the difference between these two roles, if you will, and the importance of the emotional support animal in our society today. Much appreciated.
Not at all. Thank you so much.
That's Dr. Rachel Hogg, who's a lecturer in Charleston University School of Psychology, with some really important questions around the role of these emotional support animals, which are becoming ever more popular and ever more needed in today's society. Listening to Community Drive on 2MCE FM.